On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about the federal government invoking the Emergency Measures Act. It is a historic move, for better or for worse. We'll talk about which one it might be. And Don Robertson joins us. We got lots to talk about, from drug tests at the Olympics to former Canadians winning medals for the States and the best hole, or one of the best holes, in golf. We got lots to talk about. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Canada's federal government has announced that it has invoked the Emergency Measures Act. It's the first time it's ever been done. And it's to get rid of the truckers and the protests and to clear the bridges and that. It is certainly a step that is available to it. But it is... It is one that is a divisive topic. I want to bring in a guest to talk about this. We are joined by Christian Luprecht, professor at both the Royal Military College of Canada and Queen's University, also a fellow at the Macdonald Laurier Institute. Thanks so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Scott. Hello.
So is it an overstatement to say historic day today? I think that probably fits, doesn't it?
Well, anytime you do something for the first time, especially when it's effectively suspending certain measures of our democratic rights and our constitutional principles in order for the state to assert essentially its monopoly in the violence of force, that is an extraordinary day.
So I wonder if you could take just a moment, because I don't know that everyone still, we've heard a lot about it, but I don't know that everybody still, myself included, completely understands the Emergency Measures Act, Emergencies Act. What does this do? What does this allow? If the government were to take it to the fullest extent it wanted to, what does this allow it to do?
So one thing it does, it speeds up decision-making processes. It allows decisions effectively by order and council and cabinet, rather than having to make certain changes that otherwise you would have to push through parliament. So you can see that might concern some of the protesters who are really concerned perhaps about some of the decision-making style by the current government. So the government will need to alleviate those concerns by ensuring that there are proper safeguards in place. I think the reason why the government is looking to implement those powers is that for law enforcement and intelligence agencies, effectively what it'll do is it'll lower the evidentiary threshold, which means effectively you're going to make search and seizure easier, and you're going to make detention easier. So that means it'll be easier to detain people, and you might also, under those provisions, then allow for people to be detained longer without facing a charge than they otherwise would be. Because you might imagine if you had to arrest dozens or hundreds of people in Ottawa, for instance, there wouldn't be a way of providing charge and evidence against all these people within the 24 or so hours that would normally be the case. So why is the government doing this? I think one of the reasons they're doing it is because it means if there was an operation in Ottawa, the government would now own that liability. So rather than having to share that liability with the province and with the municipality, they can now accrue to themselves that liability. And so that's going to make certain elements easier. So that's the charitable view. The cynical view would be is that the government has sat on its hands for 2.5 weeks, has kept on passing the buck to the municipality and the province because it knew this was going to be ugly and it didn't want to have anything to do with it. And now we're at such a crisis mode that only the federal government has the capabilities to respond, which presumably it hasn't provided, because she slowly for 2 weeks has been asking for 1,800 officers that presumably hasn't gotten yet. That now the federal government's trying to look like the heroes, blame the municipality and the province for mismanaging the issue, even though its intelligence agencies originally dropped the ball on this and is now trying to look like they're the only people who are competent to resolve it. So the listeners can pick which interpretation is more credible.
Well, and is that, like, if someone wanted to take that latter one, is it a realistic, you said cynical, and I think that's a fair word, but is it also a realistic view? Because one of the criticisms that has been leveled at this prime minister and this government is, well, what have you done in the last 2.5 weeks to de-escalate this? I mean, you've said a lot and you've called the protesters names, which some will say you've dug them in even further. But what has the government done prior to this to de-escalate this situation?
Yeah, I think what we need is, we certainly don't need any more inflammatory comments. I think some of the communication strategy has been charitably put suboptimal, shall we say. I would also say it is not helpful by a minister of the crown during a crisis to criticize the local police chief. But look, I think the federal government could have been much more explicit already with the powers that it has much earlier on. So, for instance, the Minister of Citizenship could have indicated that we will be revoking, under his ministerial discretion, revoking passports of people who are charged. We could have said that anybody who's out here protesting, we're going to identify who you are. We're going to run Canada Revenue audits on you. I think the Attorney General could have been explicit that anybody who's engaged in activity that meets the threshold will be charged with domestic terrorism or will be facing charges of sedition. So we could have laid out the lines much more clearly and much more explicitly, much earlier on. But I think basically we could have also provided resources. I mean, where are the water cans? Where are the tactical units? The federal government owns the largest police force in the country with 17,000 people. It has a tactical unit that is in Ottawa simply to assist with situations such as this. Where are the reinforcements to actually assert the rule of law? And I think what's troubling to me here is, of course, that not all, but some of the occupiers have clearly called into question the rule of law in this country by calling for the overthrow of the prime minister, of the government, calling our democratic institutions into question, our constitution into question. That's seditious activity. And that's where the government needs to come in and say, not just this is where it stops, and not just saying you have to stop that and you have to go home. That's where the full force of the law has to show up. And at a minimum, we need some psychological deterrence. Mm. I would have parked the tactical units and I would have parked the water cannons right at the side of the protesters 2 weeks ago. Even if you're not going to use them, or if you don't have direction to use them, at least it's psychological intimidation to show the state is here and the state is watching, and you better watch what moves you're going to make. We need to shut down the seditious party that's in front of parliament.
If we have never, we, the government, if Canada, if we have never used this Emergency Act before, and I know that it's a rework of the War Measures Act that Trudeau's father used, but it's different now. But if we've never used this before, it suggests to me that this is the break glass in case of emergency kind of last straw legislation we have in the worst case scenario. Is what we're facing now the worst case scenario that Canada has ever faced since the War Measures Act?
It is comical that to get a handle on a couple of thousand protesters, we need to enact the Emergencies Act. I mean, in Europe, countries like France and Germany regularly deal with demonstrations of tens and hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, look at the May 1st demonstrations. Those are always sort of a fisticuffs with police among thousands and thousands of demonstrators. Where, like, we were completely, wholly unprepared. Who had the idea of letting 400 trucks drive downtown Ottawa to protest? You have a right to protest. You don't have a right to protest with your truck, let alone to park that truck downtown Ottawa. So, I mean, like, we have just, it shows that our entire national security posture, our entire national security architecture is hopelessly inadequate for the 21st century if we need emergency measures to get a handle on a couple thousand protesters. And so we need to have a serious conversation about the legislative architecture in this country, about our institutions, about our capacities. And I hope that by the end of this, we will have a royal commission to figure out what went wrong, because we are compromising the most fundamental duty of the modern state, which is to provide security for its population.
We only have a minute left here, but my real concern with this, and, you know, maybe I'm overstating, maybe I'm missing something here, but it seems to me that anytime you use something once, it becomes easier to use it a second time. And once you've done it a second time, easier a third time. People always say this about divorce. Unfortunately, if you get divorced once, it's sometimes easier to get divorced a second time. I don't know if that's fair, but I do wonder about this. Now that this has been thrown into the public sphere, do you worry it becomes easier to use it a second time for even a lower threshold?
Anytime we need to use emergency measures, it suggests that we were unprepared. And why were we unprepared? Not because we didn't know, because we didn't listen, because people like me have warned for years on deaf ears, because Canadians are naive when it comes to security. They think we're far away from the world's problems. They don't realize we live in the 21st century where radical ideas, flows of money, weapons, people easily cross borders. And so this needs to be a wake-up call to make sure that we get our heads out of the sand and be better prepared. And that's ultimately what this is about. We should never have put ourselves into this situation to begin with. And we wouldn't have if we would have been innovative like our allies in Australia, in the UK, or in the US that have innovated significantly in the last 10 years, where we've been sitting on our hands.
Christian Luprecht from the Royal Military College and Queen's University. So much appreciate the time today. Thank you for doing this.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Let me bring in the man who is he runs Calm Choice Realty. He's the owner-operator of the Dundas Real McCoys, who are getting back into action this Friday. It's been a long wait. His name is Don Robertson. He joins us now. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Scott. How are you?
I am fine. Do you remember how to coach hockey? It's been a while.
I was never that good at it, so it'll come back to me the best I can. Yeah, we'll get it figured out, I think.
Sometimes that breakaway, you know, it illuminates things. Maybe you'll be better than ever.
I've learned some new swear words for the referees, so that'll help.
Yeah, okay. It probably will. Let us know, not on the air, but let us know what those are at some point.
Can I try a couple out right now just to see how it goes?
Ben is actually taking calls for the quiz, so his finger is not on the sensor button, so no.
Okay.
But, you know, another time sometime, maybe in the midnight show, we can do that one. Don, I got a lot of stuff I want to get to. And by the way, I do want to mention, as I said, starting this Friday, the Dundas Real McCoys are back in action at JL Greatmay Arena. So you guys are playing Friday and the Dundas Sports Hall of Fame induction, right?
Yes, there will be, I think, half a dozen inductees at the end of the first period. We're excited about that, a group that includes Charlie Collins and Mackenzie Hughes.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes.
Who is golfing?
Well, that's okay. You know, it happens. Now, and are you allowed fans? You are allowed fans, right?
We are allowed up to 500 fans.
Okay.
But I don't know how that changed today. They said 50% capacity, so we're going to find out what that does to us. If it's 50% capacity, it'll probably be 800 or 900 fans. We'll see. We'll get that sorted out this week.
Either way, there will be people in the building, and people can get there if they want, as long as they get there early enough.
Absolutely.
Yep. So, Don, look, we were talking earlier in the show about this Emergency Measures Act, and quite frankly, I mean, I'm a little grumpy about that. And then something else happened today that, boy, I'm trying not to be grumpy, but what's happening with the Olympics with this Russian figure skater, and I don't know if you followed the story, but this 15-year-old Kamila Valieva, who has tested positive, no one's arguing she's tested positive for something that there's no reason for it to be in a 15-year-old body who is otherwise healthy. It's an angina drug, which apparently can be seen as a performance-enhancing substance. Anyway, the Court of Arbitration for Sport had a ruling on this and decided, you know what, she can continue skating. Why not? Why not? Because you know what, not letting her continue skating would do irreparable harm to her. Not speaking anything about the other skaters who now have to know they're competing with an athlete who's not clean. But Don, I got to tell you, like, how many Olympics in a row are we going to have Russian athletes cheating and doping and not being punished in any real way before something is done? This to me just becomes, it becomes so ludicrous. It's an outrage now. It was an outrage before, but it's like, you know what? We're just not ever going to punish Russia for anything it does, no matter how dirty it is.
Well, I don't know how the sport of arbitration get to determine the Olympic rules, because the Olympics are so independent and so high and mighty that I can't believe that they don't have control of it. Like, is that body that said she could compete, even though she's guilty, is that an arm of the Olympic movement?
No, it's independent.
If it's not, well, then the Olympics generally tell those people to go pound salt.
But they can't, because this group is the oversight group. This is like the Supreme Court, while the other ones, the IOC and the International Skating Union and the World Anti-Doping Agency, are all under it.
Well, we should have had them rule on Ben Johnson.
That's, you're right. I mean, why not? Why not?
Ben was an immigrant from Jamaica. He probably didn't understand the rules. why don't we just let him go? There was a lack of communication. He was fine. He wasn't doing anything anybody else wasn't. Oops, did I say that? So I think cheating in sports, in drugs or anything else, is like being pregnant. You either are or you are not. And I don't see how anybody, not anybody, but any particular body, get to determine who they let on and off the hook. She's 15 years old. She probably didn't know what she was being given at all, or perhaps she did. She's a kid. She's 15 years old. Punish the other people. The other thing I'd point out, Scott, is that the Russians aren't even participating as Russia, right? It's the Olympic Committee. The Russian Olympic Committee, I believe. CROC. Yes. So they barred Russia from competing as Russia. And you can compete as this group. And oh yeah, if you get caught cheating, yeah, we're good. You know what? She's just a little girl. She's 15 years old. Why don't we let it go?
And I've heard nobody, Don, I've heard nobody yet, almost nobody, pointing the finger at her for that reason. Look, you're 15. There are people around you who you are going to listen to. And I would agree with that. When I was 15, if I had been an athlete of any repute when I was 15 and some adult said to me, you do this, you do it. No one's pointing the finger at her, but the people around her and the system, once again, is getting a pass. And it just seems so, you know, you're right. Russia was not allowed by rule. They were banned from these Olympics, technically, the Russia as a country, but Russian athletes are allowed in. And yet they walk in wearing the Russian flag on the sleeve at the opening ceremonies, which basically is a middle finger extended to the IOC and everyone else. From the beginning, the second they walked in with those Russian flags on their jackets, there should have been someone at the other end of the lap at the arena saying, you're all on your way out because you just broke the rules. See ya. You already, before the Olympics started, you broke the rules that were set by the IOC. That should have been the end of your time in the Olympics right then. And they don't. They never do anything.
The first country to be found guilty. Now, let me throw something out there that perhaps would make no sense to anybody. There are allegations that sometimes where the Olympics go and who decides who's going to get them there is presented with tremendous gifts and financial rewards. If you happen to award, like, the gift package when you go look at a particular country, loaded with stuff.
That's changed. It was, but I think it's changed. I think that's changed a bit, but it absolutely was. Once upon a time, yes, absolutely. It was horrendous.
Well, you think they picked China because that was a good idea?
I think they picked China because the other options, they didn't have a lot of options, quite frankly. I mean, I think it was China or maybe it was Kazakhstan was one of the other ones. And I don't know, but there weren't a ton. It's not like in the old days, Don, most of these places where you've got a lineup because the cost is so high now that you have to have countries that are willing to spend billions of dollars of public money. There's not a long line to do that.
That's probably a whole show on how do they move forward with, I hate that term, how do they move along in the future with where to award them. You better pick a site in Europe. You better pick three sites and rotate it. Because with the pandemic and people trying to be fiscally responsible, nobody can afford to do it anymore. It's crazy what they're doing. And China are running it with no fans.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's all public money anyway. But I agree with you. I think that idea is a really good one. That if you had say three for the summer, three for the winter, and you rotate them around for three each, do the math on how many years that's going to be, 24 years. But it requires you then, Don, you know, we've seen these photos in the past of like Athens, for example. Look at some of the facilities that were used for the Athens Olympics that are now they're in as good a shape as the Parthenon. If you are forced then to keep them up and running for 24 years, at least then, okay, it's a reason to keep these facilities going. I think it's a great idea, but they won't do it for whatever reason.
I was lucky enough to be in Calgary in 88 Like they have the ski jumping, the one the Eagle went off, and the bobsled. And last time I checked, you and I aren't planning any bobsledding. And so if you build that structure and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. You can have it this year. We're going to Europe, then we're coming back to Calgary. So do it at least two times in a 12-year cycle before the things wear out. And I don't know how ski jumps wear out or bobsled tracks wear out, but I guess they will. But you know what I mean? Like, just they're going to have to be smart about it, because there is not billions of dollars, especially after this pandemic. They're not going to find anybody to host these things. So they're going to go to places like China and
Sochi and to Russia and places where they can have all the money they want, because it's all from the regime. And it doesn't come from, no one's voting on it. No one has a say at a ballot box to say, no, we don't want to do this.
Where was it in Russia?
Sochi.
Yeah, I hear that's a ghost town now.
Yeah, and it would cost them $50 billion. They built an entire city that no one lives in now. But I go back to this thing about this figure skater. So now you've got...
Sorry, yes.
No, it's okay, because it's all related. Now you've got this, the IOC saying, okay, she's going to compete. She's going to be allowed to compete. But if she wins, we're not going to have a medal ceremony, because that's really going to show them. And you know who that's really going to show? So what about the second place and third place finisher? Let's say they're not from Russia. Let's say a Canadian and, Japanese skater finish second and third. Now, because of this, if she wins, they don't even get to have their medal ceremony. How is that fair? And if you're a competitor who's going up against her, you know, going into this, I already know I'm competing against a dirty athlete. It may not be her fault. It may be the people around her, because she's 15, but I'm competing with someone who's not competing on a level playing field. The whole thing, Don, is so, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. And again, it's the same country. And once again, it cuts into the credibility of the Olympics and of the testing and of clean athletes. If you're, I applaud clean athletes, Don, I really do. But if you're a clean athlete, you're a dupe. Why would you play clean when all you got to do is fight and get your country to fight for you and find a loophole and you're fine? Why would you do it clean?
Here will be the answer. You've heard this 1,000 times when we do this. Follow the money. This thing will only change when the sponsors start saying, we're not going to do this. We're not going to pay you this amount of money if you're going to carry on like that. If you think that's fair to sport, and a lot of it will be U.S. money, and heaven forbid, one of the U.S. athletes is on the podium and they don't get the presentation, or this young lady beats an American out, and when the uproar starts getting to the sponsors, then you'll see something happen. But as long as all the sponsors are there doling out the hundreds of millions of dollars, nothing will change. As soon as it starts affecting the money, you'll see something happen. You know what they should send the truckers in.
What they should do, and I say this realizing that it's totally unfair to the other skaters who have trained for this. Nonetheless, I'll throw it out there. What the other skaters should do is all of them should say, we're not skating. Your number one television event at the Winter Olympics, figure skating, we are not competing. Men and women, we are all walking out until you do the right thing here. And we're going to leave you with a giant, enormous hole in your schedule and make you look like idiots. Now, that's totally unfair to the other skaters who have trained for this all their life and get one crack at it in most cases. But boy, you want to know what would happen? If all of them threatened to walk and she was going to win by default, her and the other Russian skaters, you know what? You could, somebody, Don, some organization would put up the money to have the parallel Olympic for figure skating somewhere, and they would all go and attend there, and you'd see who the real winner was.
Well, you know, and I agree. I think that would be very interesting. It would be like herding cats to get it done. But here's who you're really eliminating. You're only, like, I enjoy watching figure skating during the Olympics. I've never gone and said I want to go watch a competition locally, and I apologize for that. But I enjoy it. But you're only really going to affect five people because everybody is judging, and everybody knows all about that figure skating competition, knows there's only probably five that have a shot at a medal. So you're going to affect those five. You wouldn't have any trouble getting the other 22 or whatever the number is to say, yeah, I may as well walk, not winning anyway. So the majority would win. You'd only be taking it away from, like I say, five people. And if they don't want to compete against somebody and get beat by somebody that shouldn't be there, maybe you get everybody to go.
Yeah, I don't know what the other answer is. I don't know what the other answer is especially with Russia. And look, you know, every time we talk about this, I'll get an email or emails from people who are Russian saying, you're picking on our country. It's not about picking on your country. It's that your country's athletes are the ones that continue to show up dirty. And so, I don't know what to do other than to point that out. Like, we've seen this. Russia is technically banned from these Olympics because of their systematic doping. Now you've got the big doping case, and it's a Russian again. I don't know what to do with that other than to say, that's the reality. Don't yell at me. Don't yell at other people who talk about it. Maybe, like, be concerned that it's your country, that your country continues to do this.
Well, they're guilty.
That's what happens.
You're pointing out that they're cheating and they got caught. That's not picking on somebody.
I agree.
If the U.S. got nailed, we have the same conversation.
I do think, Don,
be picking on the U.S.
We got to go to a break here. I do. You go back to 1988 to the Dubin inquiry. For those not old enough to remember that, it was when Canada had a very painful, very public inquiry into our own athletes and their doping. Ben Johnson and the other ones under Charlie Francis, who was the coach. And I look back at that now and I think, you know, I want to know something? I'm proud that we did that as a country. I'm proud that we did the right thing. But on the other hand, I kind of think we're idiots. We are, because no one else, I thought maybe that was going to be the thing that would inspire other countries to take a look inward as well and say, Canada's leading the way here. They're showing they're willing to look hard at their own athletes and find the ones that are dirty and guilty so we can get them out of sport. I thought that would inspire others. It didn't do anything of the sort. All it did was make us look like a bunch of idiots for doing this ourselves.
That's right. Everybody's looking at it going, why are they doing that to themselves? Yeah, like, we're all doing this. That's back in the era when the East German women could pick up trucks with one hand. We're going,
pretty much.
Wow, was she ever strong.
Yeah. No, it's you look back and you think, I'm proud of us for doing that, but boy, it didn't really do what it was supposed to do. It really did. Maybe here it did. Maybe in this country it did. Maybe we should be proud of that, and I suppose we are. But boy, it did not inspire a worldwide self-evaluation.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Don, do you want to go cranky again, or you want to have something more upbeat? Your choice if you want to keep going with the angry stuff.
I do cranky really well. Let's end on something happy.
Well, all right. So yesterday at the Olympics, not anything to do with doping, absolutely nothing, but Kaylee Humphries won a gold medal. American, quote, American bobsledder in the monobob. Kaylee Humphries won the gold medal. If people are thinking, wait a second, why do I know that name Kaylee Humphries? It's because not that long ago, like I think it was 4 years ago, she won the Lou Marsh Trophy as Canada's Athlete of the Year because she raced for Canada. She had a problem with the Canadian Bobsleigh Association and her coaching. She is married to an American. She's now racing for the States and she won a gold medal. And maybe I should be happy for her, Dawn. And maybe the situation that led her to have to go to the States with the disagreements and fights and problems and all kinds of other things with her coach should make me overlook this. But I got to tell you, I'm not thrilled that someone that our country put all the money into training to be a great athlete is now winning medals for the States. maybe that's cold. I don't know. But I'm finding it hard to be real excited about it.
Yeah, it's a free country, right? I don't know what annoyed her. That she wouldn't compete for Canada anymore.
Yeah, well, it was more. She argued that it was more than an annoyance. She argued that it was a really, really bad situation with her coach. But that's in court right now.
I think that might say more about the Americans than it does her. Like, how do they welcome her with open arms, knowing she was a Canadian, born and raised and trained here, and yet you want to reap the benefits of our training and our athlete? Really? Like, do you guys not have standards? I mean, you have to borrow athletes if they knock on your door and say, I'm in? I guess that tells us they'd take Sidney Crosby in a heartbeat if he'd become an American.
Of course. But I mean, what would happen if we were, what would happen if we started doing that? I mean, like, I don't know. I as I say, I don't know. I'm not going to get into, because it's in court right now, as I understand the situation with her coach. And so, you know, it's not a good situation with her coach. And but I don't know. I just find it difficult to look at someone who is clearly a Canadian looking as excited as she is, holding the American flag and chanting USA. And so it just, to me, it's, I don't know. It just looks wrong. It looks odd. It looks wrong. And I'm sure she's a lovely person. I got no issue with her personally. Never met her. But it just, it seems like it's a screwy medal.
Here's what I think we've talked about before. We've talked in the past about athletes that said, if we can drug you, if we can give you enough drugs that will make you strong enough to win an Olympic medal, they will go undetected. You'll win a gold medal. You'll be dead at the age of 40. We have no idea, but there'll be a lot of them that would say, I'm in.
Yes.
So if we're prepared to think that athletes would do things to their body that normal human beings wouldn't, but they have a chance to win a gold medal, their lifelong dream, they would do that. If you put that up against, I'm mad at the Canadian coach, I married an American guy, I'm an American now, I want to win a gold medal. Okay. No. If we think people do that in their body, just marrying an American or being married to one and getting your citizenship, I can see that happening. I don't like it. I think we should.
Oh, I see why she did it. I see why she did it. And there's no question. I mean, look, she's still obviously a very good bobsledder, and she didn't think it was tolerable to do it for Canada, and she could go and race for the States, and they were willing to take her. I see why she did it. I look at this and I think, you know what? Someone put online today that maybe, you know, we should go back and revisit. If you're going to be saying you're an American, maybe that Lou Marsh Trophy should be revisited, and it should go to someone else who is truly a Canadian through and through. I don't know. It just something about it just feels not right. That's all. Something about it just feels not right.
Heaven forbid they put a statue of her up, because that'll get taken down soon.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, and you know, the things she says about her coach, the things she said about him, and again, believe it's in court right now, alleges the thing, it's in court right now, as I understand it. I get why you would want to, if you were an athlete, find someone else. If what she says is true, I get why she would want to not be racing under that coach anymore and find somewhere else. It's not about that. She has that choice. It feels weird. Anyway. She'll probably win more.
If somebody wins the Lou Marsh Trophy as Canada's greatest athlete and then wins a gold medal for the U.S. the next Olympics, of course it's weird. Of course it's odd. And seems very wrong.
And she'll win more gold. I mean, she's good. She's going to probably win another gold or two at these Olympics. And we'll see. But, yeah, I'm going to have a hard time, you know, rooting real hard for her. Let's just put it that way.
I'm not going to root for it at all.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Don, did you watch any golf on the weekend between watching figure skating and bobsleigh?
I did not see golf, and I usually do, but I worked Saturday, and so I didn't, no.
So this weekend was the Waste Management Open, which is the worst name for any event in the world of sports. However, which is ironic because it is one of the greatest events in the world of sports, the Waste Management Open at TPC Scottsdale in Arizona. And I know what hole 16 at TPC Scottsdale, the Waste Management Open is. It is, other than maybe Amen Corner for the Masters, I don't know that there is a place on tour that fans want to spend a day more than the 16th hole. Basically, for anyone who doesn't know, and if you're a diehard golfer, forgive me for, you know, wasting your time with a re-explanation, but it's a par three, so it's a short hole, but they've turned it into a stadium. So there are bleachers and galleries completely enclosing this par three. And when you say it is where fans go cuckoo, it is unlike any golf hole anywhere, because golf is always, you know, you clap, you know, just like screaming and cheering and throwing stuff. And it's wild. And this weekend, they had two holes in one there. And I would encourage people to go look online at the video of what happened after the two holes in one. Don, it looked like a mosh pit at an Ozzy Osbourne concert. It was unbelievable.
I think we used to, when I ran a pro team in Brantford, we go to Flint and Michigan or Muskegon. And you could tell when it was dull or draft night. Something we can't have here in Canada. And it looks like that hole is free draft all weekend. All the beer you can drink, free. Just got to get a spot.
Here's the funny part about it. I don't think it's free beer, but my son was watching, and we were watching together for a part of it. And he goes, you know, there is nothing that the folks who run that tournament love more than a hole in one. Because when the guy got the first hole in one, everyone in the entire hole, and there's probably 30,000 people there. Everybody who had a beer suddenly was throwing it up in the air. It looked like it was raining beer, and everyone now had to go buy a new one. They loved it when the guy got a hole in one. It was huge money for them. And then a second guy got one. And then after they threw their beer up in the air, they then chucked their cups and bottles, other like metal bottles, all over the course. It was hysterical. I mean, you know, people are going, why is that funny? You have to see it. It was hysterical. It's so unlike any other place in golf.
It's the only golf tournament where there are no rules for the fans.
Basically.
It's the only one I've ever seen.
Yep.
Like, if you want to do it, go ahead.
And the players, so you would think that when people are chucking stuff onto the course, the players would be just sour. The players, especially the two guys who get the hole-in-one, now naturally they're happy anyway. They were thinking this was the best thing ever. They were loving it. They were loving it. Anyway.
No, I wish I'd have seen it. Sorry.
Well, you can. You can. And so here was the funny part. So after the second hole-in-one, my son and I are sitting there watching, and I don't know who turned to who. One of us turned to the other and said, should we go next year? We're like, you know, that it's on the bucket list. It's definitely on the bucket list. We're like, should we go next year? And we immediately went to try to get a hotel. Thought, hey, let's put down a reservation on a hotel for next year. No hotels within like 100 miles of the place for that weekend. And we're like, man, we are not the only ones who had this idea. Clearly, you got to move faster. Then it dawned on us what was going on. It's the same weekend as the Super Bowl, which is like 5 kilometers away, also in Arizona. Every hotel in Arizona is booked up next weekend for the Super Bowl. So
maybe
it's going to be a weekend. That is going to be a weekend next year. The Waste Management Open followed by the Super Bowl. There are people, they are going to have just assembly lines to take all the people away who've passed out from drunkenness away from the golf course and the stadium.
Well, that will leave lots of room for you.
Yeah, it's. I actually think they may. I would be surprised next year if they don't change the dates of the tournament a little bit to make it finish on Saturday instead of Sunday to clear the way for the Super Bowl. I wouldn't be surprised at all, but yeah, that is the place. That is so, yes. And I'm hoping, Don, that next year as well, that we're, or at least when people have seen this to some degree, you know, at the Canadian Open now, they have the rink hole, which is a good idea. It's like a hockey rink, and it's similar idea. You're allowed to make noise and bang on the rink wall boards and everything. I'm hoping that some people who watch this take a little of this into the rink hole, bring a little of that feeling.
And that's pretty much the idea of Barry Forth of Copetown Woods when he was involved in helping run the Canadian Open. So Barry gets the Canadiana of the rink boards. Good for him. But you're right. That'd be fun.
It would be an awful lot of fun if someone gets a hole in one and everybody on the course is sprayed with beer. You know, except for those people who hate beer or don't want to walk around soaking wet or stinking of hops all day. But, you know, each to their own. Each to their own. Don Robertson, listen, once again, you tell us some the details for Friday night, because the Dundas Real McCoys and Allen Cup Senior A Hockey is finally, after a long, long, long time away, you guys are finally back on the ice. What's going on Friday?
Well, what we're doing is we've got a three-team league. We've been shut down two or three times to get a start going. So we're going to run a showcase event. There's Hamilton Steelhawks, Dundas Real McCoys, the new Flamborough Ducks team that are very well stocked with former Whitby and Brantford players. And so we're going to play all the games at JL Greitmeyer. There'll be Fridays and Sundays. Our traditional start Friday night, and McCoys will play almost every Friday night. Makes sense, right, fan-wise. And there'll be games Sundays. We'll play for the Robertson Cup. And it's going to be kind of quaint. Can't call it a bubble, but it's pretty unique. And we wanted the fans to be able to enjoy the brand of hockey. We didn't want the brand to go away. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to open up Friday against the Ducks and induct a bunch of people into the Dundas Sports Wall of Fame. So hopefully it's a good night, and hopefully the restrictions from the province will let us get more people in. And we're going to have a good crowd. It'll be a lot of fun.
There you go. Friday night. If you need something to do, if you want to just get out of the house because you've been locked up for too long and there's nothing on the Olympics that night that you're interested in, there you go. There is your opportunity for something to do. Don, thanks for doing this. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. I enjoyed it. Have a good night.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.